Okay, 1 John chapter 2. I have somewhat of a provocative title to my sermon this morning. I've entitled it, "Are Hip-Hop, Weightlifting, Sports, Facebook, and Movie Watching Worldly?" Let's read 1 John 2:15. "Do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world..." And notice this, these three things that he hits on. The desires of the flesh. Now, I had you look at that before. We went over to Galatians 5, and we can see the lusts of the flesh, or the desires of the flesh. It results in all sorts of sins, including division. All manner of divisive sin. We looked at how that even connected with racism. But you know, when we hear lusts of the flesh or desires of the flesh, even in Paul's mind over there in Galatians 5, you know the things that come to our mind first. Sensuality. It's the passions of the body. It's the appetites of the body. It's sexual immorality. It's overindulging in alcohol and food and drugs and just living it up. That's the idea here. I mean, that's what comes to our mind. Sensual gratification. And then what does John say next? The desires of the eyes. Well, that's not hard for us to think about there and to grasp. It's what our eyes see. We want things to look good. We want beauty. It's we judge things by appearance, by how they look. We judge cars by how they look. We judge church buildings by how they look. We judge people by how they look. It's outward beauty. It's that outward draw. Judging by appearances and outward show. And then we've got the pride of life. That's pride. Social glorification. Where we want to be exalted. Who we know. Our social status, the degrees that we have, the neighborhood we live in. I mean, I've seen it. I've seen it. A lot of people with money don't stay long here. Why? It's not nice. It's not nice going to the east side, and the building isn't nice. I mean, comparatively speaking. The pride of life. It's just social status, the influence that people have, the power, the people that we know, the colleges we went to. Nothing to do with the soul, nothing to do with God, nothing to do with Christ, nothing to do with His glory. And you know what all that? That's what the world is like, and it is not from the Father, but is from the world. And the world is passing away along with its desires. I think sometimes, I think our brother Andy mentioned this in the past about, have you ever seen the pictures of C.T. Studd? I read his biography before. In the early parts of the book, there he is with all of his buddies at Cambridge who played cricket together. Bunch of very fit and muscular young college-age men, all handsome and rich. And then he'd say, you go to the back of the book, and there he is standing with a bunch of heathen in Africa with bones in their noses. And that's what the gospel does to people. All these things, the lusts of the flesh, the desires of the eyes, The pride of life is not from the Father, but it's from the world. And the world is passing away. And his point is, if you're worldly, you're going to pass away with it. If you're worldly, you're one with it. And you'll pass away with it along with all its desires and those who have those desires. But whoever does the will of God abides forever. The title of my sermon is Hip-Hop, Weightlifting, Sports, Facebook, and Movie Watching, Worldly. I might also add to that list, are video games worldly? Is owning a boat worldly? Vacations in Europe? Having a TV? A large screen TV? Dancing? I remember somebody's wedding not too long ago and Papa got pretty crazy out on that dance floor. Public schools? Is public schools worldly? Observing Christmas or observing Halloween or Easter? Tattoos? Alcoholic beverages? Spurs games, Silver Stars, rock music, or how about 50s, 60s music, poker, gambling, smoking, nose, lip, tongue, or other sorts of piercing. Long hair on men, short hair on women, wearing shorts, short shorts, mixed swimming, men not wearing shirts. Storing up bunches of money in retirement, going to expensive restaurants, driving a BMW or a Hummer or a Mercedes-Benz, in-ground swimming pool, malls, taverns, going to Las Vegas or to Mardi Gras or Times Square on New Year's Eve. How about just going to a bowling alley? Is that worldly? Subscribing to Sports Illustrated, hunting, having a collection of guns, getting a concealed weapons permit, auto racing, golf, skiing, going to the beach, collecting paintings, owning a Rolex or a motorcycle, buying coffee at Starbucks. Are these things worldly? Excessive time in family trees, coloring your hair, makeup, more than one set of earrings, career-seeking women, putting your children in daycare, 10-year-olds with cell phones, getting a massage, cruises, nose jobs, facelifts, whatever other, using credit cards, going into debt. Are those things worldly? Okay, I'm going to give you the answers now. Hip-hop, yes. Weightlifting, no. Sports, maybe, but probably not. Facebook, definitely. Movie watching, that depends on the kind of movie. Video games, absolutely. Owning a boat, well, we'll spare Pete. It's probably okay. Vacations in Europe, well, that depends on whether I ever take one or not. A TV, not if they're small, but certainly a large screen one would be. Dancing, I don't know, Pop. We'll spare you. Public schools? Probably. Christmas? Absolutely. Halloween? Well, not if you hand out tracts. Easter? Tattoos? For everybody but Rachel. Spurs games? Well, yeah. Silver Stars even more. Rock music? Well, it depends. Is it 80s? 50s, 60s, poker, gambling, smoking, nose, lip, or tongue piercing. That, of course that is. Long hair on men, probably. Short hair on women, that doesn't look the nicest. Driving a Mercedes-Benz, that is absolutely worldly. Unless you're an elder of this church. Brethren, listen. When it comes to what loving the world is, or what it is to be worldly, isn't it interesting how we have this tendency to come up with our own definitions of what is and what isn't. And we like to define worldliness in a way that doesn't touch us. That's typically, I mean, I'm doing a message here right now today that deals with worldliness. And probably, if the truth be known, there is worldliness to a degree in every single person in this room, and some much more than others. And yet, not a single one of us is overly given to admitting it. We recognize there is such a thing as being worldly. We even have people in our minds who we believe are worldly. But I'll tell you this, it's typically not the guy that stares back at us in the mirror. You see, when it has to do with that guy, what we allow in our life, that's a Christian liberty. That's how that goes. After all, there is such thing as Christian liberties, isn't there? And if anyone challenges us about our Christian liberties, then they're a what? They're a legalist. Away with your legalism. Back off. Well, let me tell you something. We're in 1 John. I don't want you to move away from here right now. But I want to tell you something that the Apostle Paul said in the Colossian letter. You might jot this down if you want to peruse it later and really absorb it. But in Colossians 2:20, the Apostle Paul said this, "Do you submit to regulations?" What kind of regulations? A list. Do not handle, do not taste, do not touch. Referring to things that all perish as they are used, according to human precepts and teachings. Do you see what he's saying? We like to come along and we like to say, that's worldly, that's not worldly. And we like to have our little list. I remember when years ago I would listen to Lester Roloff. He was on the AM 1100 right at lunchtime when I would go out working as an engineer. I'd go out at lunch and I listened to Lester. And I remember he would talk about, you know, the typical fundamentalist, worldly, smoking, dancing, going to the theater. He even thought taking aspirin. He even thought chewing gum was worldly. The fundamentalists like to have these kind of lists. We tend to have these kind of lists. And you know what? Paul comes along and he says, that doesn't work. He says, these have indeed an appearance of wisdom in promoting self-made religion. And that's what it ends up being. You have your list. You made it up. You expect other people to conform to your list. And what he says is that's just self-made religion. Asceticism. You know, what's asceticism? Yeah, keeping things from yourself. It's making your life on purpose difficult. You're depriving yourself of certain things. And he says that kind of living, severity to the body. We sang a song about written by Martin Luther. You know, when in his early days, when he was there in the monastery, he would just flagellate himself. He would whip himself. It's that kind of thing, as though that works righteousness into people. These lists, these rules, these confinements. Here's what Paul says. They are of no value in stopping the indulgence of the flesh. Now, look, do we have to make decisions about whether we're going to observe Christmas or not? Absolutely we do. We all do. But it's this idea of creating our own lists by which we legalistically enforce that on ourselves and everybody else, as though this is the standard for what worldly is and is not. And he says, it just doesn't work. It does. You do not get dominion over the flesh simply by lists of do's and don'ts. Now, let's look at John. Because you know what John does not do? John talks about worldliness, loving the world. He talks about this. And isn't it interesting? You know what we want? We want John to say, well, John, what about this? Is that worldly or is that not worldly? But he doesn't go there. What he does is he's not interested, like Paul was talking about, this has the appearance of wisdom. It has an appearance of godliness, but it's not useful. What he wants to do is he wants to hit us with some wisdom that is absolutely useful and true. What he does is he throws the world and God into direct antithesis. They're opposed. They are incompatible. He pits the love of the one against the love of the other. You see that? Do not love the world or the things in the world. Why? If anyone loves the world, it's opposite. The love of the Father is not in him. It's contradictory. These things are opposed. This is exactly the same truth. Again, I don't want you to turn there, but just listen to this. James 4:4. Many of you know this. Very similar. Do you not know that friendship with the world is enmity with God? Therefore, whoever wishes to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. You see this, friend of world, enemy of God. They're opposed. Love the world, love of the Father. They're opposed. They're incompatible. In other words, you can never find somebody that loves the world and they're splitting it down the middle and they're loving the Father too. You can't come over here and find somebody that's a friend of the world and a friend of God. The one excludes the other. That's what John and James are teaching us. These are mutually exclusive realities. We need to let that focus, or we need to let that sink in. The world is against God. How can I tell? Now, look, this is critical for all of us. I allow certain things in my life. You allow certain things. We're making decisions all the time. What we allow, what we do not allow. Anybody that I've ever seen that is really trying to please the Lord, at one point in your life to the next point in your life, that changes. You mature, you grow, you understand your Bible more, you understand the Lord better, what it is to please Him. We are constantly striving to know what it is that's pleasing to the Lord. And so we shouldn't expect that this is going to be static. Like we can set up our list with, you know, a week after we're born again, and then we're going to come along after walking with the Lord for 40 years and the list is going to be the same. It's not. This is a matter of growth. But what we need to understand is this. Our list should be comprised of things that we look at and we think, yes, if I allow this in my life, the Lord will be pleased. This has to do with this world that is against God or the love of God. Obviously, that's for God. That's to be with God. That's to want to please God. That's desiring God. That's desiring His delight. Everything ought to be being put into these kind of categories. Where does it take me? Now think about this. The world is against God. When we think world, think about that which is secular, that which is anti-God, that which is ignoring God. That's what the world does. It ignores. It doesn't necessarily directly attack. It will do that. But it's simply godless. Take God out. It's secular. It ignores God. It's anti-God way of doing things. The world wants our love and our friendship. This is just like Bunyan painted in Vanity Fair. The pilgrims went in there and it's enticing them. What will you buy? We want to sell you our goods. What characterizes their goods? Anti-God, ignoring God. It wants us to do anything and everything to the exclusion of God. You see, this throws our list right out the window. Because you know what? The fact is that if that's the measure, what excludes God? Then something that can look very good, even religious, can exclude Him. And something you judge somebody else for, thinking that's worldly, you may not recognize how much that's actually something they're capable of worshiping God in. Isn't this kind of what we have going on in Romans chapter 14? If I can do this unto the Lord, glory to God. If you don't do that unto the Lord, that's great. I do it unto the Lord, that's great. But you see, in every case, the Lord is the consideration. He is at the midst of this. What the world wants is it wants us to love that which is just perceived to be complete without God. Look, I can remember being young and very lost. My dad, my stepfather, was a salesman. You know what happens around Christmas when you're a salesman? Well, actually, my dad wasn't a salesman. My dad was the guy that he was in purchasing, the opposite. And what would happen around Christmas time is all the salesmen that wanted my dad to purchase from their companies would come and bring my dad gifts. And so they brought these boxes of filet mignon. They're down in the freezer. So a bunch of buddies come over and probably trunk full of beer, and we're heading off to Lake Michigan. I said, guys, we got filet mignon. And we piled that in the car, and we're at the beach. And I can remember we're sizzling those things on the grill and beer in hand and all of us having fun and just saying, it doesn't get any better than this. Do you know what a statement like that is? It's the heart and soul of what it is to be worldly and secular and anti-God and ignoring God, way of perceiving things. Do you see that? It's another way of saying, our life, it doesn't get any better than this. Our life is complete. At that point in my life, I didn't see God. I didn't hear God. I'll guarantee my thoughts were not on God. It was godless. And yet all the lusts of the flesh and the desires of the eyes and all the pride of life was in full bloom. And we were content to have it that way with God not in the picture at all. That's it. That's worldly. When I can be content with something and God's not in it. And if you've got that kind of thing in your life, it's worldly. That is exactly what this is. Is that not opposed to the love of God? Of course it is. Of course. We leave God out. He's just, you know what? Our appetites are gratified. What we want to do for pleasure and what we want to do for amusement and what we want. No thought of whether God's in it, and it's paradise to have it so. And you may not say it in such dogmatic terms, but you just think it. And you know what? Worldliness can be seen when you compartmentalize your life to where, well, I got church, that's my God thing, and then I step out of there, and you know what? I can go to any kind of movie I want, and it doesn't matter, because after all, I gave God my Sunday morning, and now I can just do this. And it's you compartmentalize where you have these compartments of your life. God's in this one, God's not in this one. Now listen, if you're able to develop these compartments in your life that God's not in, that's worldly. And you need to stop thinking you can share these. What that tells me by this word is that if you're well able to have these compartments in your life where you're able to ignore God, then the compartments where you think you're acknowledging God are a sham. Because the two can't go together in a life. You're loving the world or you're loving the Father, and they are incompatible. You have one or you have the other. Whenever we are content with that which excludes God, that is what it is to be worldly. You can see how that's the opposite of loving the Father. If you can just be pleased with God-ignoring ways of life, surely that speaks something about your love for God or your lack thereof. I mean, you think about it. A newlywed. We've had some weddings recently. You think about newlyweds. They get married. I mean, can you imagine just recently if you think of the newlyweds and there they are at their reception. No couple is ever content to be at a reception after they're newly married. They want out of there. But can you imagine if all of a sudden some of the guy's buddies come over and say, "Hey, the snow's deep at Aspen. Come with us. There's going to be lots of single women there. There's going to be fun around the fireplace. The snow's great. It's deep. We're going to have this tremendous weekend. Come with us." And I mean, if that guy says, "Yeah, wow, lots to eat, lots to drink, lots of fun, lots of just everything." I mean, brethren, it is absolutely unthinkable for us. I mean, you don't even have to go there, but it's absolutely unthinkable that the guy's going to say, "Well, honey, I'll see you when I get back." It's unthinkable that he's going to go with his buddies, he's going to go out there, he's going to be sitting by the fire in the evening after a great day of skiing with drink in hand, single young lady at his side, with all of his friends, and whooping it up, that he's going to say, "It doesn't get any better than this." Do you know what's going to happen if you talk to a guy like that who's just gotten married? I'll tell you what, he would rather be in a prison cell with his new wife than to be in Aspen without her. And this is the picture. We're talking about what we love. That's what John is hitting us with. What we love. You would question his love. Every bit. You would question his sincerity behind the vows he just made if he would not rather be any place with that new wife of his. You know what? We have experience here. When I hear this, when I hear that a singer is going down this road where his songs are increasingly leaving God out, and you get professing Christians who just say, "I don't care. I like him anyway." That's worldly. You cannot explain that any other way. They're content to have God excluded. They want what they want. They like that style of music. They've idolized that singer. And so they want that no matter how it reflects on God. That is not love for God. That is not love for the Father. And what's the mutually exclusive reality? It's love for the world. And you can't get around that. You can do your song and dance. You can try to justify yourself. It is worldly. It simply is. Are you going to argue that the love of God is the primary motivator in that person's life? It isn't. I mean, and here's the thing. Here's the thing. If we say, okay, you know, I can aside this block of time, and I know that if I take up this hobby over here, or if I take up sports over here, what we have to watch is this. There is a time to come aside for rest. If I could come aside with rest and I can have good fellowship with the brothers, and we sit and we watch a football game, and I do that with my son, and it was good. We were able to continue to talk about God in the midst of it. We were able to continue to reflect upon the Lord, or the sermon, or, you know, some teaching on the person of Christ. But I'll tell you this, when you get to a place where you take up anything, and you know that it is removing thoughts of God. It is removing a Godwardness. It is becoming an obsession. Your mind is now full of stats. All you can think about is the game on Saturday or the game on Sunday, and you know it. You know it is replacing an affection for God, and yet you will continue down that path because it's got a hold of your heart. That is worldly. That fits this definition that John is giving us. It is worldliness. And, you know, the trademark of the world, as we see it in Romans 1, is to exchange the glory of God for worshiping and serving that which is created. I mean, if I'm going to worship football team, that's exactly what I'm doing. I'm worshiping and I'm serving the creature, the created thing, rather than God. I mean, brethren, I'm not saying Christian singers or a college football game is necessarily sin. What I'm saying is all these things test us. They test what we love truly at the deepest level. And look, I would just say this to you. We all have a mother and we all have a father. Most of us, even if they were a bad mother and a bad father, and we know it, we have a level of respect. We have a level of desire to want to protect them. Certainly if you have a son or a daughter, you know that feeling. If you have a husband or a wife, you know the feeling of wanting to protect the one you love. If I were to call out, you think about it. You all think about it right now. The person, humanly speaking, that you love the most, whether it's a child or parent or spouse, you think, or even a friend, fiance. If I called that person out by name right now from this pulpit and I just openly proclaim them to be some silly idiot and I insult them publicly, I treat their name like dirt, I trample all over it, will you dare sit there unaffected? You won't. You simply won't. If you can, what does that tell you and us about your love for that person? It tells you that you don't have love for that person. You cannot sit unaffected by somebody mistreating even the name of the one that you love. I just trample all over it. I treat it like dirt. You're not going to sit there like that. And you know what? I hear of those who can sit down in front of a movie where God's name is just desecrated, or Christ's name, and they can just be unaffected. Just unaffected. Cry out, "I got Christian liberty!" Oh. I mean, you tell me, what does that say about the level of your love for God? And if you tell me it says nothing, I'll tell you, you are a liar. And you know that's not true. Because you would never use that argument with a fiance. If somebody dragged her name through the dirt, or his name, you would never do it. If it was your son or your daughter, or your mother or your father, you would not do that. Of course it calls into question our love. Brethren, consider those who love movies and TV shows and count it as great entertainment, even though God's name gets drugged through the dirt. I would just ask you this. Will any of us be shocked if on the last day Jesus says to such people, "By this, you've more than proved your lack of love for the Lord. You're unfit for glory." Would you be shocked? I mean, based on what we know, based on what John is telling us, "Do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him." You tell me who you're loving when you can allow his name to be desecrated. I'll tell you this, you would not pass in a court of law if you said, "No, I love God more than the world." Would we be surprised if in the end we find that people that counted that as entertainment and they could freely just drink that in unaffected, even sought it out? I mean, well, I don't go to the movie for that. Well, are you going to use that argument with other things in life? You don't. I mean, that'd be like watching a TV show that just slanders the person you most closely love in your life, but you say, yeah, but I don't, you know. Here's a movie over here that just derides the person in your life that you love, and you say, yeah, but I don't watch it for that. No, if you really love that person, you're going to be affected by the fact that they are trampling on the name of the person that you love, and you're gonna recoil from that. Rather than saying, oh, I got Christian liberty. Brethren, what John's saying, there's a reality about what we love. We love one or we love the other. Paul says this in Romans 12:2. Do not be conformed to this world, but be, now listen, but be. Here's the opposite. Don't do this, conform to the world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God. In other words, this is just like what John hits us with. The will of God over against being conformed to the world. The world is passing away along with its desires, but whoever does the will of God abides forever. It's the same. This is the thing that he is contrasting. World against God. World against the will of God. World against the love of God. And he says this, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind. That's like this. Don't be conformed to the world. Where is it you get the feeling that we get conformed? It's not that our body takes on some shape of the world. It seems that what he has in mind is it's our thoughts. It's the mind that gets shaped. That's what conformed means. Conformed means to take the shape of, to think like, to perceive like, to discern like the world. That's to be conformed to the world. That means I think about things and analyze things the way the world does. I view things the way the world does. And this is something that's happening in the mind. Don't be shaped like it. You know how, you think with me here. Just think with me. How is our world? Now you tell me. How is it? I mean, when it comes to social media, how is it? Just wastes enormous amounts of time. How is the world when it comes to TV and movies? Just consumes their lives, filled of it. They'll watch all manner of garbage on it. How is the world when it comes to money? I mean, so much of how people live is geared towards, in this world, geared towards what they can get. Money, they're just greed-driven. Or, like the lust of the eyes, they want, you know what? They want the prestige of having the nicer car. I'm amazed on the east side. You get shabby houses, but then you'll see a Hummer in the driveway. You see that on the east side. It's like, well, if we can't afford anything, we're going to at least afford a vehicle that we can impress others with. And you know, when you're not at home, it looks very impressive. Right? It's all impression-driven. This world, how we view. I mean, you've got all this, you know. Look at Joan Rivers when she died. I mean, her face was not looking like it was when she was younger. Why? Why are people doing this? Because of how they appear. Not concerned with the inside, but it's the appearance. How are people going to perceive me? This world is perception-driven. I want to have, and you know, you get in your cliques. There are certain things that are important in this group. I mean, the group I grew up with in high school and in college, we had the things that were important to us. We had the things that made us look good to the other guys. We couldn't understand sometimes, that doesn't matter to us. That just doesn't matter. These people get all hung up over this stuff over here. We can't figure it out. Well, yes, we can, because we were consumed with the things we were consumed with, and that's how the world is. It's consumed by stuff. Stuff that has this appeal that have me and you'll be satisfied. And we're always driven that way. I got to get that. If I get that, then I'll be happy. It's the Christmas syndrome. Like kids, you know, they get those gifts, and by the end of the day, then they're hollow again. They need something else. This is the mindset of the world. Give me, give me, give me. I gotta have this stuff. And what is the world? Is the world consumed with things like boats and guns and weightlifting and sports and money and music and debt and cars and pleasure and retirement and security and fun and vacations and Spurs games and Dallas Cowboys and new cell phones and social media, success, education, knowing the right people, having the biggest TV, going to movies and all that? You tell me, is the world consumed with that? And so if that characterizes your life, do you think there might be some conformity to the world? Now, think about this. Jesus said that if you don't follow me, you can't be my disciple. I tell you this, when we take the four Gospels and we begin to examine the character of Jesus Christ, the life of Jesus Christ, the things he occupied himself with, You tell me, when you compare Jesus Christ over against this world, is there a radical difference? I can see one. But then the next question is, which one do you look like most? Which one are you conformed to most? Because that will tell you which one you love. And I'm not going to put most in there, because John doesn't give us in-between places. John's, like his usual character, is stark, dogmatic, night and day, yes or no. We need to think about this. Be very careful that you don't just explain away conformity to the world. Because it says something about what you love. It is very easy to convince ourselves that we love God by our own standard, while all the evidence would disprove that. Jesus said this about the world in Mark 4:19. The cares of the world and the deceitfulness of riches and the desires of other things enter in and choke the word, and it proves unfruitful. Now, I want you to think about that. The cares of this world choke the word. You know what the idea of choke is? If somebody starts choking you, what is happening to you? Not only dying, but why are you dying? Well, it's because you can't. Yeah, nowhere. What happens when you get choked is you're being deprived of that which you need for life. And you see what he's saying? The cares of the world choke the word. But none of us have to struggle with that. I've told you all this before. When I was lost, I was absolute, idolatrously driven by sports. That's been a fight in my Christian life. There was a season during the 90s after I was first married, I didn't have a TV, and it was bliss. And then my dad died, and I brought a TV home, and the battle started. Yes, you could say there would have been wisdom in not bringing the TV home. I would not argue with you. But I know this, that when I start trying to figure out what the Michigan Wolverines are doing, or the Detroit Lions, that'll tell you where I'm from, and I'm not advocating the Lions, but I know this, that when the Tigers are headed for the series or the Spurs are doing very well, it's a battle for me. And I'll tell you, if I give myself to it, it begins to occupy time in my mind. And you know what happens when you allow something to occupy space in your mind? It, of necessity, pushes out other things. It, of necessity, chokes. It, of necessity, keeps you from thinking about God and thinking of His Word and thinking of Christ and having a mind that is set on things above. It brings you down. You know that to be true. And we can become, when Eric first came here and I found out he was idolatrously at one time just driven by graffiti, and it was like, okay, I cannot relate to that. And you know what? There are things you cannot relate to. Things that you see. I was thinking earlier today about Don Johnson. Don Johnson was hooked on arrowheads. Nope, never been there. But for all that, you know where you have been. And you know the things that you can allow into your life that begin to choke. And what are they? They're the cares of the world. Like I told you, what's the world all about? The God-ignoring, anti-God way of just being content with things. I can watch that game, my favorite team won, and that's great. Spurs got another championship, and I'm good with that. I remember there at Miller Curtin Company, right probably months, maybe months before I came out of engineering altogether and went full-time pastoring. But I remember one day out there in the plant and hearing one of the mechanics say to me, he had cancer, terminal cancer. And he said, all I want to see before I die is another Spurs championship. And you know, we can look at that and we can say, oh yeah, that's worldly. But beware. I mean, we can look at that. We can recognize that in other people. But what I would say to you is beware that you are letting things in your life that choke the Word. And if you're pretty much good with life, you think about God once in a while, you come to church on Sunday, but it's not, brethren, you get the, here's the thing that I want you to feel. Do you get the feeling that John is talking about the love of God ought to be something that controls us all the time? It ought to be something that governs every single choice you make in life. Not just whether I'm going to church or not, but when you walk out of here, what am I going to do on Sunday afternoon? Is this going to help my love for God? Is this going to deepen it? Is this going to be helpful? This world wants your love. Oh, it wants it. It wants your time. It wants your attention. It wants your money. And you know this, what you give your time to and what you give your money to, what you give your attention to, that is what you love. I want you to think about Demas. The Demas's demise. You know, it's interesting that in Philemon 23 and 24, it reads this way. Epaphras, my fellow prisoner, just listen to this. Epaphras, Paul, to Philemon, Epaphras, my fellow prisoner in Christ Jesus, sends greetings to you, and so do Mark, we know Mark, Aristarchus, Demas, and Luke, my fellow workers. Paul counted him as a fellow worker, Demas. That's a nice title to have with the Apostle Paul, my fellow worker. In Colossians 4:14, listen to how this changes. Luke, the beloved physician, greets you, as does Demas. When we get to 2 Timothy 4, for Demas, in love with this present world, has deserted me and gone to Thessalonica. Crescens has gone to Galatia, Titus to Dalmatia. Luke alone is with me. Demas goes from fellow worker to simply Demas to being a lover of this present world. You know what this whispers to us? That worldliness tends to creep in. Typically doesn't happen just like that. You typically aren't walking godly and bang, you trip into worldliness that causes you to depart from the apostle and from Christianity altogether in just a moment. That's not what happens. You know what happens? It's gradual. And you know how it happens? Christian liberty. You just keep justifying your Christian liberty. Let me tell you something. If you're a part of this church and you've been approached more than once or twice about worldliness and you've just shrugged it off and you just count those people legalists, I would beware. I'm not saying our church is not capable of having legalistic people, but I would just beware. Because if there are Christians who look at your life and are concerned, and not just because they got their own checklist, but because they look and what they're really concerned about is where your affections are, and it concerns them, be on guard. Brethren, justifying your liberties, you can get to the place where you begin to presume upon God that I can play with the world and it's not, I'm in control. You play with the world, you may find out in the end you pass away with the world. Be very careful. We need to be on guard that we do not become so accustomed to the darkness of this world and the darkness of our generation and its God-ignoring ways that we just start thinking it's normal and we can just do those things. We had an elders meeting the other night and Brandon was talking about at his old church and how a girl came in and she had to announce that she was pregnant and that the church actually, she got pregnant out of wedlock and the church applauded her. Like she was doing this marvelous thing by admitting this. You know, the sins of this world can just become so normative to us. People obsessed with sports and with movies and with Facebook and with all the stuff in this world. We can just see it going on all around us. We just, especially as we just fall as a nation more and more into moral decay and we look around us and it just seems so normative. Do you realize probably 200 years ago, a young unmarried woman stood up in a church and said, I'm pregnant? The scandal that would have produced? When what's happened? Numbness, callousness. Brethren, we need to be on guard against the world's God-ignoring ways, just thinking it's normal. Worldliness is worldliness. I mean, you think about what it is. It's all about our culture, our society around us, making sin look normal, making it look acceptable, making it look good. And you know what they make Christianity out to be? And righteousness and people who truly seek after holiness. What do they make them out to be? Legalists, fanatics, bizarre. That's true. Holiness is not a thing to be scoffed at. And you know what? You are not going to have impact on this world by becoming as much like the world as possible. Worldly evangelists are not used by God. They may get converts, but they're not converted to Christ. They may be converted to your way of loose living Christianity, but they're not converted to Christ. God doesn't use people like that. And you can't produce examples where it's true. Not where it's really true. Brethren, James 1:27. Catch this. Just feel this. Religion that is pure and undefiled before God, the Father, is this. To visit orphans and widows in their affliction. And to keep oneself unstained from the world. Here he's talking about worldliness. Isn't it interesting that in James' mind, You know what he's putting in the category of not being worldly? Visiting orphans and widows. So often we're not asking the right questions. You know, so often it's just this, is that right or is that wrong? As though, you know, you can just sum up, is having a boat right or wrong? Well, if that boat consumes you so that it's choking God out, choking Christ out, choking the Word out, that's worldly. If you have a boat and there's some fatherless kids in the church, and you're actually ministering to them, and you say, guns. You got somebody going out hunting deer and they bring some of that venison to the widows in the church. You see, it's perspective and it has to do with what we love. We need to be really careful that we're not standing up and just judging other people and judging their motives. But we need to be really careful about what our own motives are, about what we allow and what we don't allow. We need to be asking these deeper questions. Should I drive a Mercedes-Benz? I mean, see, the question, brethren, isn't yes or no. The question is this. Man, we really needed a car, and I would not have sought that out, but that's what God provided. And now when I tell people, I can say, God provided that to me, and I can tell the story that just brings glory to God. Or is it that I secretly love the prestige, and I secretly love the attention and the self-glory and how others think about me? Brethren, there's a big difference there. A big difference. The worldliness of anything can be measured by how it pulls my mind and attention away from the Lord and away from His glory and His beauty. Doesn't the psalmist say, we heard this today, whom have I in heaven but you? There's nothing on earth that I desire besides you. My flesh and my heart fail, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. Brethren, is it okay to do? I mean, think about the desires of the eyes, the desires that I have in my body for food, for drink, desires for a wife, desires that, yes, my car looks bad, I should probably wash it. I mean, desire for this thing, desire to, yeah, the paint's peeling off the trim on my house, I probably ought to paint that. But, brethren, these desires, having a car that's nice and shiny and clean, I hope that you can feel that John's answer would, is it okay to desire those things or not desire those things? Well, he's going to say it depends. He's going to say, yes, it is okay to desire these things as long as your desire for them is motivated by a love for God. I mean, when I got married, did I have a desire to get married? Yes, my desire more than that was for, there were girls that I could have married just to have a wife, but I was looking for one who was godly. Why? Because I wanted to run fast in my pursuit of Christ. Is what's driving you in the decisions that you're making? This is what we have to ask. Is God everything? Do we say, I have nobody else but Him? I mean, do you desire what you desire and allow into your life, what you allow into your life always with your eyes upon the Lord? This is John's mandate to us. Do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. Brethren, if the love of the Father is in you, if you love God and desire God and pan after Him, do you recognize what happens? Every aspect of your life becomes an opportunity to express that love. His love for Him, everything ought to be run through that filter. I want to love God. I don't want to be slowed down. I don't want to be distracted. I don't want to be turned away from heaven. I don't want to, I mean my eyes there. I want to keep my mind on things above. I do not want to become worldly. I don't want to push God or choke God or choke God's word. I don't want that. And so everything I'm looking at and I'm thinking, is that going to help me? Is that going to hinder me? Is that going to grieve His spirit? I don't want that. I don't want to allow that thing in my life. And I'm putting everything. Is that an opportunity somehow to glorify God? Whatever we do, whatsoever, whether we eat or drink, we've got to be thinking that way. We've got to be thinking that. Away with the compartments. Well, I did my church thing. I went to prayer meeting even. But I've got these compartments where I can just remove God. And I'm good with that. Don't go there. That is deadly to go there. Don't love that. Detest that. Put that out. Confess that to the Lord. Go on. Get rid of it. Brethren, there's a big difference. I mean, you know, you find somebody that says, yeah, I got that car because I liked it. Really? That's all you thought about? Yeah, I went head over heels into debt because I liked that car. I was drawn to that car, wanted to impress my friends by that car. Did you seek the Lord on that? Did you pray about that? Well, I don't know. I mean, did you seek counsel? I just wanted it. Brethren, that's just eradicating God out of the picture. Don't make choices like that. Why would you want to live like that? That's worldly. That's world-driven. Brethren, every door we open should just lead us into a room where we are able to find the love of God. I mean, let us be committed that if there are any desires that we have that are devoid of good desires for God, then let us be committed to put it out of our life. That's the checklist. Love of God, love of world.